It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
And I don't need to explain to you that our peers around the world far outpace us on this front, rejecting our cynical path, recognizing a crucial right to counsel in civil cases, in the European Union and in the British Commonwealth countries since the late 1970s.
Gene Nickel, former president of the College of William and Mary, explains why, if the U.S. sought membership in the European Union, they'd say we don't measure up because our justice system treats poor people so miserably, in the keynote speech at the 2012 Annual Legal Aid Conference. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn why online payday loans are never a good idea and often are a scam. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 194, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. The bills need to be paid, and you don't have enough money. A short-term payday loan may seem like the only option to get you past the crisis. These days, payday loans are just a mouse click away, and some of the offers are mighty tempting. A guaranteed loan without a credit check. Better watch out. This could be a setup for a scam. Because of the exorbitant interest rates, payday loans are never a good deal for the borrower. But using an unknown online payday loan store can be even worse. According to the National Consumers League's Fraud Center, scammers are creating bogus payday loan sites to snag their victims. After the application is completed, the soon-to-be victim is contacted by the scammer, who has good news. The loan can be processed as soon as they wire money to cover the taxes or insurance or application fee. All of these fees are bogus and should never be paid. The requests for payment normally continue until the victim catches on to the scam or simply runs out of money. It isn't easy to track down these online scammers. They're very good at hiding. They use fake street addresses and anonymous IP addresses. They change names and locations to avoid law enforcement. They even may be operating from a foreign country. There are other potential dangers. To apply for an online payday loan, you need to supply personal information, such as your bank account and social security number. Ask yourself, do you really want to give this sensitive information to an unknown company via the internet? Fraud experts say it isn't worth the risk. A huge number of websites that are designed not to originate loans, but to collect personal information and sell it to the highest bidder. By giving out this information, you could end up getting bombarded with more fraudulent offers. Protect yourself. These tips from the National Consumers League will help you spot and avoid advance fee loan scams. If you're asked to pay money to get money, it's probably a scam. Requests for upfront fees before a loan can be granted are a sure sign that something is fishy. If you're asked to wire money or put money on a prepaid card before you can get a loan, it's a scam. Online payday loan scammers usually ask for fictitious fees to be wired via Western Union or MoneyGram. These are bogus. If you've been approached by or lost money to an online payday loan scam, report it to the National Consumer League's Fraud Center at www.fraud.org. This information will be forwarded to the appropriate law enforcement agency. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. This past fall, Gene Nickel, former president of the College of William and Mary, gave the keynote speech at the annual Legal Aid Conference and explained why, if the U.S. sought membership in the European Union, they'd say we don't measure up because our justice system treats poor people so miserably. Here is Professor Nickel's address.
In truth, I'm honored to be here because I admire you folks and the remarkable work that you do. Lawyers, legal providers, apostles of justice, working on behalf of Virginians in the toughest circumstance, living out day in and day out Vaclav Havel's definition of hope, which he described not as a prediction of success or a description of the world around us, but a predisposition of the spirit, a predilection of the heart, the choice to live in the conscious belief that we can make a difference in the quality of our shared and sometimes threatened lives. The nobler of contested hypotheses. I am honored to be with you. Tonight, in the richest nation on earth, the richest nation in human history, we have more poor people than at any moment in our nation's long history. A stunning 23% of our children. In my state, 40% of our children of color living in stark, relentless poverty, much higher than any other advanced democratic nation, a figure that ought to shame us to state it out loud, a number that without more suggests failure as a commonwealth. We have the largest gaps between rich and poor since we started keeping the statistics 50 years ago, now documented as the largest gaps between rich and poor in the entire advanced industrial world. We've also become the least economically mobile. If you're born poor in the United States, you are more apt to stay that way than in other countries. If you're born rich, the same. All in the nation that talks the most about equality and dignity and justice for all. In our declarations of independence and our constitutions and our pledges of allegiance, in the cool things that we carve on our courthouse walls, we talk the most but do the least among the advanced nations. It's tough to be the richest and the poorest and the fairest and most benevolent all at the same time. Sort of a tough collision. At least one of those conflicting premises must be a lie. And I think people in this room know which one. It's not all bad, though. I don't want to mislead you. I should be candid. There's a different lens. I read a few months back that Gucci high-end sales last year rose by 26%. Yves Saint Laurent came close behind at 24%. Louis Vuitton went up over 15% last year. BMW more than doubled its quarterly profits. Sales of BMW S-Class sedans that cost over $200,000 jumped by 15% last year. Porsche's overall six-month marker improved by 59%. Saks Fifth Avenue's 57%. Tragically, Neiman Marcus flatly sold out nationwide of something called Christian Louboutin Bianca platform pumps at $1,200 a pair. But in the same reports, it indicated that Walmart began selling smaller packages because its shoppers no longer have enough cash on hand to buy multi-packs of toilet paper. These are interesting times. Though you wouldn't know it to listen to our politics in these electoral campaigns, mum's the word. One party runs under the assumption that poverty is like Dumbledore or Voldemort, the word never to be mentioned. And the other party runs on the platform that the only thing wrong with America is that those at the bottom take too much and those at the top don't get enough. I'm reluctant to be one more out of touch prima donna coming in, speaking to those who do the most crucial and hardest work of a profession that operates in constant, steady, unembarrassed violation of its core tenets, tenets like equal justice under law and the notion that the kind of trial a person gets cannot depend on the amount of money that he has. Another lawyer who comes in and tells you how great you are and then retreats to a cushy office in Chapel Hill, sending you back to the battle line. I try not to do that. In fact, I've tried for years to press hard on questions of economic justice and equal dignity. But what we do at my poverty center is such a pittance compared to what you do, to the cost and obligations and challenges that you've assumed. I don't pretend otherwise. Still, here I am as requested, grateful for your work, if modestly embarrassed for the meagerness of my own. You don't need me to tell you about the tragic contradictions of the American commitment to access to justice, that we're not mere neutral arbiters in this, that we've created a legal system that provides the only effective, coercive means to resolve hundreds of millions of disputes. We have made that system hugely complex and mysterious and expensive and technical and foreboding. We have said in turn that we're the only ones who can shepherd people through it. If somebody attempts to practice law without authorization, we come down hard. Then when 80% or more of poor and near poor Virginians or North Carolinians are priced out of its use, we say too bad. We're agnostic about it. It is not our problem. Although at that point, any system based on equal justice would either have made lawyers available without charge far more pervasively, or it would have radically simplified the processes we use to resolve huge categories of disputes, making lawyers less necessary. We have steadfastly refused to do either one, saying as long as the courthouse door is technically open, formally open, it makes no difference if the bulk of people can't actually use it, in a profound preference of substance giving way to form. And I don't need to explain to you that our peers around the world far outpace us on this front, rejecting our cynical path, recognizing a crucial right to counsel in civil cases in the European Union and in the British Commonwealth countries since the late 1970s. If they played it straight, we couldn't even be admitted to the European Union because we treat people, poor people, so shabbily. Our legal system would be deemed non-compliant. And as if to make the point, last year the massive international study by the Gates Foundation on the rule of law found that the 15 nations classified as wealthy in the study, of them the United States comes in last in actual access to justice. And even given that, I know in my own state, our congressional delegation has been busy voting to zero out, to defund the Legal Services Corporation, concluding that last place apparently isn't good enough. We need to press our boot on people's necks a little harder. And I remember in the last Supreme Court Justice Senate hearings, Lindsey Graham bragging that the best thing that could possibly happen to the world at large would be if our system of justice was exported jot for jot to every corner of the globe, a statement he could not have made if he were poor or if he had ever met anyone who was. So you're probably asking, what can you tell us? What did this fool make the drive for? We are on emergency footing. Your clients are, their families, their neighbors, my clients, my colleagues and compatriots in North Carolina. I've talked a bit about those at the bottom, but I could say from our field work in Carolina with the NAACP and the Justice Center that mere numbers powerfully understate it. They don't reveal the outrage of homeless families living in Hickory, a few hundred yards into the woods, in tents and cardboard shanties, till the cops roust them out, slashing their tents, their only possessions, as deterrents, down the road from sprawling mansions, in a tale that Dickens wouldn't have had the imagination or the gall to invent, or the exploding food banks just over the border in Ahoskie, with embarrassed, employed, first-time users who camp out all night long, midwinter, to get an early spot in line in the morning to make sure that their kids don't starve in the wealthiest nation on earth, or the homeless women and men who trek at 5 in the morning to the Hallelujah Kitchen in Raleigh, passing out of the shadows, down from our state capitol, a few safe hours before our legislators arrive, walking the same paths, on their way to explaining with an unyielding and uncurious stupidity that there are no poor people in North Carolina. And that misses the broader structural problems that plague us, and a high percentage of the Virginia families that qualify for your services. The wage of the average American worker, adjusted for inflation, is now lower in real terms than it was 30 years ago. So if we put it in sexist terms, if we could find that median American worker out there right now, he'd be making less money than his daddy did 30 years ago. And 30 years ago, the top 1% of earners in the United States brought home a hefty 8% of our total national income. Not bad, 1% bringing home 8. This year, that top 1% will capture over 25% of our total income. So as most of us have lost ground in the last 30 years, those at the top have more than tripled their share. We are hideously askew. And despite that, think of the posture of our politics. No matter who wins this election, there is a broad consensus now that we need to dramatically cut government programs and social services. We've been on this binge, the theory goes, and we're going to have to pay the piper. We have moved past the greatest dangers, the banks and Wall Street. They've been restored. But now the rest of us are going to have to pay for it. The gravy train is over. No more easy ride. We've got to start digging ourselves out. We've got to work harder, teach better, do more, learn more, do more with less, of course, as if it wasn't the swells who drove us over the cliff in a frenzy of greed and fraud. As if waitresses and coal miners suddenly got lazy and decided to coast, and families would no longer stretch and save to make it possible for their kids to go to college, and folks on Medicaid decided that they actually enjoyed being sick, or almost 20% of us decided that full-time work isn't all that it's cracked up to be, when in truth we know better. The reality, in my judgment, is that we have to wage war against this, to do literal battle in the cause of the American promise. I have come to think in my old age that Frederick Douglass had it right. All concessions to the august claims of equality and liberty have been born of struggle, he wrote. If there is no struggle, there is no progress. Power concedes nothing without demand. It never has, and it never will. We find ourselves at a time, then, that requires a fight. There are lots of small shops that are enthusiastic to join in this effort. But great as they are, Virginia's remarkable cadre of legal aid lawyers and their allies are actually closest to the plight and the burdens and the obstacles and the tragedies of poverty in this Commonwealth. You have an unparalleled network of talent and commitment and expertise, one that cannot be matched elsewhere. The first and best line of defense for the marginalized and the excluded. The smartest, most relentless, toughest, most grounded fighters for justice that the Commonwealth of Virginia has. I know you can forget that in the rush of day-to-day caseloads, but you are the strongest resource that the most threatened and jeopardized Virginians have at their disposal. This is true even when your budgets are decimated and you're strapped with restrictions that make no sense or only hateful sense, and courts are increasingly inclined to turn to you their coldest shoulders. It is a great and overarching challenge. It is also the highest honor. I was thinking last night of something Lyndon Johnson said almost 50 years ago on the challenges of poverty and civil right. "Rarely in any time," said Johnson, "does an issue lay bare the secret heart of America itself. Rarely are we met with a challenge not to our growth or abundance or our security, but rather to the values and the purposes and the meaning of our beloved nation. And should we defeat every enemy, and should we double our wealth and conquer the stars, and still be unequal to this issue, then we will have failed as a people and as a nation. For with a country as with a person, what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his soul? What is he profited? The work of a nation's soul." That is your charge. I'm serious about that. I'm not joking or hyperventilating or blowing smoke up your pant leg. I have come only to remind of the centrality of the cause that you lead, that you are its most important officers, and that it literally defines our future. You have enrolled in it. You have enlisted in this cause. You have enrolled because somewhere you read, and you thought you believed it, that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all are created equal. And somewhere we read, "No, we are not satisfied. And we will not be satisfied till justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream." Congratulations on your efforts, and thank you for letting me join.
You've been listening to Gene Nickel, former president of the College of William and Mary, giving the keynote speech at the 2012 annual Legal Aid Conference. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show.
I'm Michelle King for the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. Here's this week's legal aid success story, a true tale where justice prevailed. Anne, legally blind and suffering from a multitude of other physical disabilities, received a notice from the Internal Revenue Service informing her that her income tax refund had been intercepted by the Social Security Administration as a result of an overpayment of benefits. Puzzled, she contacted Wyoming Legal Services.
An attorney was able to guide Anne through the long dispute that ensued, ending when an administrative law judge found that the Social Security Administration had failed to provide proper notice to her regarding her alleged overpayment, and that in the end, there simply was no overpayment of benefits. As it turned out, the Social Security Administration had failed to subtract her impairment-related work expenses from her job wages, which were within the limit allowed by federal regulations. Anne was reimbursed for her income tax refund and benefits lost during the dispute. Her continuing benefits were reinstated, affording her much-needed peace of mind and allowing her to concentrate on her job and day-to-day care for her elderly mother. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and that's this week's Legal Aid Success Story, a true tale where justice prevailed.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. This show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral four, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegebright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. On July 1, 2011, significant changes to Virginia's Domestic Violence Protective Order statutes became effective. Join us next week when Palma Pastilnik, staff attorney at Central Virginia Legal Aid Society's Charlottesville office, explains the improvements that took effect in a rebroadcast of a show originally heard on June 15, 2011. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegberg.